Welcome to Ask Gwen, everyone. Now, I don't know if you remember last week's episode with Nancy Summers, and she and I got into a deep discussion about service dogs. And now, the next chapter begins with Nancy. She and I are going to get into a deep discussion about comfort support animals on planes and all that good stuff. Planes, trains, and automobiles, practically. I mean, the last one my dad told me about, and I give him full credit for telling me about, this was a hedgehog on a plane. And no, you can't take a hedgehog on a plane, but at the same time, Nancy's going to explain to us, one, what a comfort animal is and what the laws and regulations are. So I'm going to let Nancy take it away.
Good morning, Wynn. Thank you again for having me. I'm really, really enjoyed our first conversation and looking forward to this one. So what I'll do is I'll just begin for some clarification. The many of your listeners will understand what the ADA is under the Department of Justice. It is the Americans with Disabilities Act. And there is Title II and III, state and local government services, and then public accommodations and commercial facilities. And under the ADA, a service dog is defined as an animal that is a dog, can also be a miniature horse, and that is it as a service animal, period. And those dogs have access, that is their position, that they have access to public places and so forth. However, emotional support animals do not, the ADA does not take a position at all on them. And this is where the loophole is, and then what really needs to be understood, because I have personally not heard anybody discussing it. HUD Housing, which is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, has the Fair Housing Act. And under the Fair Housing Act, emotional support animals are recognized as service animals. The Department of Transportation, which is another federal agency, has their Air Carrier Access Act. And again, emotional support animals are recognized as service. The way that I see it and my firsthand experience having a disability and using a service dog myself for 8 years is actually longer, because my personal dog was trained by me. So he is 10 and a half, but I don't consider him having worked until he was, you know, it's been 8 years. Just to clarify that. So the bottom line is that we're talking about federal agencies, the Department of Justice, the Department of Transportation, and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, other agencies like Veterans Administration and so forth. I won't even mention, but they all vary, and they are all allowed to police their own. So basically, if you have a federal agency like the Department of Transportation with their Air Carrier Access Act, they recognize service dogs differently than they do on the ground under the ADA. When you arrive at the airport, you are no longer under the ADA, and this is where the confusion is. This is why I am calling in my work and why I am launching a podcast on this very topic called Service Dog Nation, is to discuss exactly what
the host has joined the conference
is exactly what Wynn is showing us here, in that the we need to bring this language, we need to unify it and bring it to an even level so that we can it's police on, you know, without the loopholes. If we remove these problems where the public is so confused by it, disabled people are, businesses are, and the public is. And that's where the judgment comes in, and civil rights are beginning to be broken because people are confused. Did that help, Wynn?
That helped, and I'm sorry, my phone cut out, you guys. So Nancy kept on talking while my phone was acting up. And so my question is, how are we going to explain this to, let's say, Delta Airlines? Because I know there's a huge loophole, and the next thing I know that me bringing this up, I will be probably quoted in the New York Times the moment I say this, because how, I'm going to say this as nicely as I can without getting on a soapbox, but how do we explain this to United Airlines, and how do we explain this to the housing authorities, low-income housing authorities, because I think they're involved too. I mean, I have a friend who used to live in low-income housing, and because she was very lucky in that way and had a low income. And so for these emotional support animals to be loopholed in doesn't seem fair.
Well, no, this is the problem, because service dogs per se are the newer one to identify in the world of working dogs, if you will. We've had guide dogs, we've had hearing dogs, mobility dogs, but now we have service dogs, and they are for mental and physical. Actually, they cover, the title service covers disabilities that fall under the ADA. So it covers, you know, different dogs. I think once this language is unified on a federal level, so that the ADA under the Department of Justice, the Fair Housing Act under HUD, and the Air Carrier Access Act under the Department of Transportation are unified, when the language is the same, identifying a service dog, and I have my own ideas and thoughts on solutions for this, but we have to raise this conversation, when, so I really appreciate you having me on, because unless we move the needle and just keep moving the needle, public awareness just isn't there. It's only confusion, and people don't understand why they're seeing animals, and why they're seeing a variety, not only a variety of animals, but why they're judging legitimate and authentic service dogs, and why people with pets are putting vests on their dogs and passing them off as service animals. Because they can. Because the Fair Housing Act and the Air Carrier Access Act have allowed it. So we need to stop that by unifying the language. And it's my hope that eventually we regulate the industry so that vest sales and breeders and agencies, and I don't know exactly how that looks, but we have to add the numbers of for people to be interested, for businesses to realize there's a movement forming to do this, and have them get on board with us. Because the only way to change legislation, as you know, is by sheer numbers. It's by public interest. It's by what gets in the media. And that's why we need to do this.
And I don't care if I have to be quoted by the New York Times. You guys, I don't care. It's important to me as a disabled woman. If I'm going to get a service dog, I want to not only be treated with respect, but I want the stigma to go away of bringing my dog on the airplane. Thank you very much, because I am a motivational speaker. I will be traveling, and eventually a human body can't help me travel. And so eventually I'm going to have to figure out. And the next best thing is a service animal and the help from the airlines, although they don't give much help now, even with a human body. But we've got to do something. We've got to do something. And this is just shocking to me that comfort support animals could be on airplanes. Hedgehogs could be on airplanes. Snakes, if they allowed it, could probably pass as a comfort support animal. Actually, I think there was a story about the snake allowed on an airplane pass as a comfort support animal. Drives me nuts.
Yes, and I do believe there is change coming. I know I was had a vote and a comment in to the Department of Transportation opened up for advocates and consultants and, you know, professionals around this industry to comment and vote, and I did. And so I really do believe that they're beginning to see that something has to change. I just don't think they are as clear as I feel like I am about what it has to be. There is some gray area that I'm not sure how we do it, but I think we need to remove the emotional support, quote, unquote, and create perhaps different levels of service so that dogs that are performing for emotional support are recognized and appreciated, because I do believe there is value there, and many, for the veterans particularly, are doing great service. But they are also not necessarily on task like a full-fledged, authentic service dog. And what gets confusing, I'll just add another element here, because it's a very important clarification around PTSD and the language of mental health, because I have large groups of people, veterans with PTSD and civilians, and not everybody with the same diagnosis needs a service dog. That's the first thing that I always clarify, because somebody has a hearing deficit or perhaps is needs mobility. It does not mean that that a whole group of people with those disabilities need a service dog. So we really need to get down to, you know, figuring out a way of assessment, and that's what I do in my business. I help people through this to understand, like you were just saying, you already know what you need in your world and that you're going to be traveling and what your needs will be. And in that process, we need to go through a vetting process, if you will, of how to determine the best breed for you. People often ask me, why are golden retrievers and Labradors common? And, you know, I tell them it's because they have the characteristics that make good service dogs. So you need to determine the size of the breed, because your lifestyle is what matters to determining that. So sometimes a small dog can be a very effective dog for, but not good for somebody that needs to be able to retrieve and reach their person. So that might have to be a bigger dog, if that makes sense. So it really is a case-by-case determination. And I think we just need to, you know, somehow once the language is unified, then we need to go in and try to figure out, okay, so how do we create perhaps two different levels, or we use the microchip implanted in most dogs today to be able to read who the what a service dog is, or who that, if that dog is indeed a service dog, and have that be put into that information. So I have ideas, and I think that you have beautifully created a platform for us to start this conversation and, move together on this in the future.
Yeah, and this is something I want to get involved with. It's going to take a while. It's going to take me a while to get a service dog, but eventually I want a service dog, and so it's going to take a while, because humans can only do so much. They can't, even though I love my humans, they can't seem to help me, because let's face it, both my mama died young. She died 8 years ago yesterday, you guys, and yesterday being August 12th, my mom died young of meningitis and still leaking brain aneurysm. That's what we classified it as. And my dad's in his 60s, and his fiance / my stepmom is also in his 60s. So even though I love the humans in my life, don't get me wrong, I think that I'm going to have to get a service dog eventually, because no way am I getting a comfort support animal, a service dog. Let's make that clear. There's a huge difference between a comfort support animal and a service dog. I don't need a comfort support animal. I need a service dog to help with my cerebral palsy. Let's face facts here, people. I have cerebral palsy. I've had cerebral palsy for 31 years. Yeah, 31 years. And every single moment I get older, as you get older, the body changes. So having a service dog would be the greatest thing since sliced bread, even though it won't be emotional support. It will be service dog, and I will make that clear from the get-go. I will be on Nancy's team. Well, I am on Nancy's team, but especially when I get a service dog, I will continue to be on Nancy's team to break the stigma.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I appreciate that, Wynn, because we need each other.
You're welcome.
We need people out there. We need people to get on board and join us on the effort, because even I often share this with people, that even if you don't have a reason to care about this subject, maybe you don't know anybody with a service dog that might be a little bit interesting, whatever the case may be. If you are in public, if you go into shopping centers and stores or on airplanes, you should care, because there is an influx of untrained dogs wearing vests showing up in airports. And, I'm not even talking about the other animals, because I think the airlines is going to sort through that. But my focus is truly on the service dogs. And frankly, the emotional support, because that's where the issues and the problems are right now. And so I think that we need to recruit the public, because we need to have the numbers to make this change happen.
But my question, Nancy, is how are we going to recruit the public? I mean, we can talk to the two of us can be bucking and squawking about the ADA until we're blue in the face. But as I was explaining to someone yesterday, until you experience it, you don't get it. So you can be talking about the ADA until you're blue in the face. But how do we get the public on board?
Well, it's going to take time. I am launching the podcast Service Dog Nation for the reason to discuss all aspects of working dogs, from therapy, because I really want to raise awareness on the topic, what the terminology means, who is a service dog, who is a hearing dog, who is a guide dog, who is a therapy dog, and stop the terms being thrown around that the way they currently are without true understanding of what, who is what, and where they belong. And so we need to straighten that out. So in part, you are talking about this. You have a large audience. I will be talking about this. I hope to grow my audience. I am creating a service dog product line, and there will be marketing and education around that as that launches. That's soon to launch also, probably in the fall. And, you know, it's just a matter of us continuing to talk. I'm speaking. I've got a book in process. So the more that we do and the more people that come on board with us and are talking about this, it will happen. It's just going to take time and some patience. I do think we're going to see changes in the airlines relatively soon in terms of the other animals. I don't think it's going to be enough or specific enough for us because we are primarily concerned with dogs that help with disability. So, you know, we have
to. I have a question that just popped into my mind. When you, Nancy, travel with your service dog, do we now have to explain this whole shenanigan to hotels? I'm presuming that that's a yes. That's an idiotic yes. Because I am feeling like the airline industry will get it. The hotels, not so much, although they occasionally allow dogs, but they're not service dogs. So how would you explain this to a big hotel chain? Let's say the Hyatt Regency. Let's say the Hyatt Regency as an example. Do you to explain to hotels that, yes, I'm traveling with a service dog?
The same way that I put a vest on my dog, you know, 98.9% of the time, probably even higher than that. I always have a vest on Riley. The same way I do that, I inform about him when I'm making travel arrangements, including hotels. I have found, particularly in boutique hotels, not so much the big chain, that I still have issues. And it's a really interesting thing that you bring up here, because only somebody that uses a service dog currently is going to understand what I'm about to say. Here's an example. I had to go to actually it was National Speakers Association, the wedding of a prominent speaker in Portland the year before last. Stayed at a lovely boutique hotel. I made the arrangement, and then when we walked in, immediately they had a prearranged floor for us. They had a prearranged place. I knew it. I could instinctively feel it. There were other dogs. I could see that the hotel allowed dogs. But what this boutique hotel did is they allowed a floor, a special floor for dogs. Service dogs are not pets. If I can say that again, I want everybody to hear me. Service dogs are not pets. They are working dogs mitigating a disability. They do not need distraction. They do not need pet smells or encounters. So therefore, the first thing I asked is if that the room I was going to was a floor for service dogs. I mean, so a floor for dogs, and she actually said yes. In fact, the girl got so befuddled, she didn't know what to respond, so I asked for a manager. And I won't go into detail on this because I'm sure you get the gist, but the point is it's always a discussion. And they always, they tried to tell me their policy, but instead I turned ADA on them because they can't do that. So your question is very, very on point. It is a
no, I actually, for many, 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 many years, the last time I was there was in 2010. I actually stayed, because they closed the hotel, they switched hands, to a Hyatt Regency, actually, the Lowe's Giorgio in Denver. They had a four dogs, four pet dogs. And
yeah.
I emphasized the word pet because, service dogs is not a pet, as Nancy nicely put it. They had a floor for pet dogs. And when I was, at the beginning of my journey, going back and forth to Denver as a child, I always was curious about, do service dogs, now granted, this was when I was about 7, do service dogs have to stay on this floor? Because I'm like, well, if they're mitigating my disability, they certainly don't. They have to be with me. They have to be with the owners.
Yeah. Here, that's another distinction. People have access. Dogs do not. You have access with your service dog. It's not the dog having the access. So, you know, I think the most important distinction is that they are not pets. They will not defecate. They will not urinate. They will not bark. They are a working animal. They are a working dog. They are not a pet. And it's offensive to me, and it frankly singles me out to try to force me to stay on a floor with pets. It's degrading.
Yeah.
I can see why.
Because you use that service dog as an assistive device.
It would be the equivalent of putting, having, I mean, this is going to be sound almost ridiculous, but having a wheelchair floor. Would you single everybody out with a wheelchair and put them on a certain floor? You just don't do that. Exactly.
And there's enough stigma around wheelchairs. Oh, my God. There's enough stigma around wheelchairs that you guys don't know what I go through on a daily basis. I, believe it or not, for me to go rock climbing, there's a set of stairs that I have to go up. There's no elevator whatsoever in the Red Brick. There's no elevator in my YMCA. There's a elevator in my gym to get to the upper floor, but my PT is on the lower floor. But there's no elevator in my YMCA ever. And I can do stairs, but there's enough of a stigma with me being in a wheelchair. That's why I don't use a wheelchair. I use a wheelchair for long distances. And I decided that a long time ago. I decided that I was only going to use a wheelchair for long distances. And I don't even use a wheelchair at work because there's enough of a stigma at work that I don't feel like dealing with them. And I know my colleagues listen to this podcast, and now they know why I don't use a wheelchair at work. I use a walk-in. The stigma is a little bit easy on that, but my God, there's enough of a stigma about wheelchairs. We don't need a stigma about service dogs on top of it. I'm sorry.
No, and you know, even if you're going to talk about wheelchairs, the other side of that I have noticed, and I don't use a wheelchair, but I have Riley, and I often think of him as, I think of a service dog as a limb, as basically like a wheelchair for those that need a wheelchair. And when you go into a ladies' room, and we know those ridiculous lines, I just wish that there was more compassion from the public, because, you know, people will run in, they'll stand in the line, and then they'll go use the handicapped stall. And technically that stall should be,
yeah,
you know, for the wheelchair coming in, or even in my case, I can't squeeze into, Riley's a large dog, you know, I need the handicapped stall as well. So
yeah.
I experience a frustration that I always think about, you know, people in my community, our community, the disabled community, that use wheelchairs and walkers and things.
Yeah. Nancy, you can get me started on a soapbox about handicapped accessibility. You can get me started on a soapbox about handicapped accessibility if you don't watch out. Can you please, people, please just be courteous. I understand there's changing tables in the public service, a public bathroom where Mazzoli could change your tire. I understand. But when you see a service dog or a woman in a wheelchair, a.k.a. me, and her aide pushing her, my aide had a bad knee, quite frankly. Let's just put it out there, that were two disabled women. And please move out of the way to let the women do their work in the ladies' room, in the handicapped accessible bathroom. Please,
yes,
please. That's all I ask. Please. That's all
well,
I ask.
And you know, when it's important to tie these two together, because I think that one of the problems that we are missing in society is understanding that these are working dogs and they are an apparatus, so to speak. I think that we need to put the focus there, because you don't see a disability doesn't mean that that dog, you know, or that person doesn't have an issue that needs to get them quickly into that bathroom.
Yeah. Hello. And I don't want to bring up too much information, but when I had really bad scoliosis, I had incontinence issues, and now you know a secret about me publicly. And so, hello, when you see a service dog and they need to get their owner into the bathroom, let them in the bathroom. Please don't be standing in front of them. Give them grace.
Yes. And that's why,
yes.
I mean, again, I think this is such valuable information, because it just highlights, you know, real need and things that are overlooked. So important.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, we can talk about this until we're blue in the face. And you guys, my e-bike is on its way. Speaking of assistive device, my e-bike is on its way to my house. And one of the things I'm going to do is I am in a search for a handicapped accessible sign that I can stick on my bike. yes, I can make one, but that won't, even though it's been approved by the city of Aspen, me making a handicap accessible sign won't help. So I'm looking for a placard that almost like the sickness you stick in the vehicle, almost like you have a handicap accessible sign in the vehicle. I have one. I have one for my dad's vehicle, and I have one for my mom's vehicle, too. So I am looking for one. So if you guys want to help me with that, that's a wonderful thing. If you guys also want to help me with podcasting, help me teach you guys how to podcast. I actually been approached by a friend of mine, another disabled advocate, who I'm going to introduce Nancy to. Thank you very much, because I think these two need to get together. She's in Colorado, though, but she does equal opportunity employment stuff all the time. And I think you two need to team up. I'll introduce you to you guys offline. And so my podcasting coaching fee is $400. I gave my first client only because she herself, mother, does not have a disability whatsoever, but her daughter has cerebral palsy. And her daughter is a phenomenal motivational speaker. So that's why I gave her the disabled discount. Well, although she did ask, what is your consultation fee? And because I've watched her daughter speak and because they want to start a podcast on their story, which is an incredible story, I gave her the disabled discount. But if you guys want to start a podcast, and I'll also give Nancy the disabled discount because what her podcast is going to be doing is filling a great need also. But for the general public, I'm doing $400 for podcast coaching, and I'm not going to leave you until we finish the podcast, but the only request I have from you guys is that you are ready to do this. You are ready to learn. You are ready to understand the medium. You are ready to do it because I need to pay off a student loan. I also met with a person who's helping me get out of debt, who's crunching the numbers for me. As we speak, we had Casey on the podcast, and that's when I admitted publicly I'm in debt. I also have a student loan plus a credit card debt, so Casey's helping me with that. And so far, she suggested that I push the public speaking and push the podcast coaching. So that's what I'm doing, and I would happily invoice you via PayPal, or you can just pay me via PayPal, too. If you do have a disability, it's only $50, but for the general public, it's going to be $400, but it's going to be worth it because I know what I'm doing. I come from the disabled standpoint. You guys know that. And for my motivational speaking fee, you guys will be paying me or paying me. My starting rate is going to be $600 because for me to get out of here physically cost me $1,000 to get two people out of here. And granted, I live in Aspen, Colorado, and I don't feel like driving to Denver, to be honest with you. I don't feel like driving to Denver. So if you guys want to do motivational speaking with me, it's going to start at $600. $100 for me to get myself organized, for me to, and of course I'll be paying my aide, but my aide has a schedule too, so that's why I decided it's going to be $600 this starting, being now I can do it virtually. Virtually, of course, is easier, but I know you guys want to see me, but for me to get out of here, it costs $1,000. For me to do anything, it, travel-wise, it costs $1,000. And forget bringing the service dog on a plane. That will cost another fee if I'm not careful. So the $600 will go towards that eventually, because Nancy's going to answer my last question. If I, let's say if I bring my service dog on the plane, do I have to pay a handling fee? I presume that's a yes, Nancy.
No, it is not. You do not have to pay. However, I always think that it's wrong when people say no, there's no cost, so everybody's faking it because there's no fee for a service dog. That isn't true. The airlines requires health certificates. So no matter what, you're paying $50 to $80 when you go into your vet to get your health certificate. And if you're flying internationally or something like that, there's additional costs because you have to go through the quarantines and you have, you know. So what I'm saying is technically when there is not a charge for a service dog. However, you do have, you have to have them groomed. That's a cost. You have to have them vetted for their health cert. So you see, there is actually a cost.
There is actually a cost, and I actually put that in to my, when I came up with this number, I thought, well, my starting fee is going to be $600 because, let's say I bring the human and the service dog, the human gets paid $1,000, and the human with two bad knees gets paid $1,000. But for me to have the money to get the health check for my dog, it's going to cost. It's not cheap. Dog ownership is not cheap for any dog, but especially a service dog. And the airlines have every right to say we need this stuff from the disabled community.
Yes, but the airline itself will not charge you for a service dog. So I always find that really interesting when people think that's why people are faking it. I think very often that they're bringing emotional support dogs on, and otherwise they're trying to dodge putting the animal, you know, below in a crate and that sort of thing. You know, I think that there's a smaller number of actual intentional fraud, but it's definitely happening where there's just, you know, it needs to be all of the vast number of animals and types needs to change.
Yep, and it's a long struggle, and I'm here to help you do that, Nancy. I'm here as a huge supporter of your podcast. I am now a huge supporter of service dogs, and I'm not a huge supporter of emotional support animals. I'm sorry, but service dogs need their time in the spotlight. Emotional support hedgehogs do not, and let's be honest, emotional support snakes do not either, because they don't count. They don't count, although there's loopholes, but we're trying, Nancy and I are trying to end those loopholes. And Nancy's doing great work. I'm doing great work, and of course I'll be helping Nancy with her podcast, and I hope to be on Nancy's podcast once it gets up and going, and then we'll see what this whole thing things and see what this whole thing is. And I'm sorry, do not follow the cute guide dog on the Today Show from Guide Dogs of America, because we, this process needs work, and Nancy's going to educate me. Nancy's going to be my mentor on service dog land, just so I am educated on what I need to do as a responsible dog owner. I mean, this is a, when we get to that point of getting me a service dog, I am going to be the most responsible dog owner ever on the planet because of advocates like Nancy, and of course, I'll be helping her with her podcast, and I'll be introducing her to people inside the disabled community who want to promote equal opportunity in employment, which the service dogs have to be involved with, because for the disabled community to go to work, you either need an assistive device or you need help from a human or you need help from a dog. So it comes full circle. And Nancy does consulting. So I want you guys to, I want local businesses to actually consult with Nancy to see what we can do. I mean, I would love my teaching job to consult with Nancy just in case we bring a service dog on, and I'll introduce you to my boss, to Nancy, just in case we bring a service dog on campus to teach the kids. I mean, God knows we are teaching kids, and there might be a day where one of our guest speakers has a service dog, and I just thought of that, and we don't know how to treat a service dog. We don't, and a lot of companies don't, and that's why Nancy's here, to help all of us.
Yes, thank you, Wynn.
And where can people find you, Nancy, if they want to find you? And I presume that people could get in contact with you and say help, whether it's a business or whether it's me or whether it's a school.
I am currently, my website is in process, right along with the launches that I'm pulling together right now. So for now, the best email for me is spirit, S-P-I-R-I-T, spirit of Riley, R-I-L-E-Y, at Gmail. And I am on all the social media platforms, from Quora under Nancy Summers to Facebook. And I believe Instagram is Nancy Wilkinson, W-I-L-K-I-N-S-O-N, Summers. Mm-hmm. At least until I change that. I may end up changing those to the name of the podcast, but for now, that's what I go under.
And you guys, I'm actually making a huge change myself with the podcast, although there's a lot of changes with the podcast coming. I have decided, not to scare you guys, but I have decided not to be interviewing everyone on the planet and only focus on people on the inside of books. And when I say that, i.e. the editors of books, i.e. the cover designers of books, i.e. everyone to make a book, because I feel like the disabled don't know how to write a book. And I want the disabled to, even though Nancy has a literary agent, which is lovely, I want the disabled to learn how to leave everlasting legacies. So even though the podcast will be still called Ask Wynn, we're slowly but surely making that change. And yes, that would be great if you could help me out with the listener-supported model. There's a listener-supported model that I support, and I stole this idea of the listener-supported podcast from the podcast that I listen to called Congressional Dish, and that's hosted by the amazing Jennifer Blaney, and I donate $5 a month to her to keep her podcast going. And Nancy, you should probably talk to her to get, she's doing stuff on the state. Her podcast is about Congress, and she's doing stuff all across the state about Congress, and maybe you guys can team up, because I think, as I said, this service dog industry needs help before Wynn goes walking into it. And even though Wynn has several policies, Wynn can only do so much. And so I'll introduce you to her to offline.
That's wonderful. I would appreciate that. Like I said, I can't say it enough that we all need each other, and, you know, it's much bigger than any one of us.
Yes. This whole thing is much bigger than any one of us. And I appreciate Nancy coming back on the podcast, and my podcast will be changing as of September 11th when I get my act together to release Smile with Dictation, and I will be releasing that via England Sparks on, if I can pull my act together, definitely not on Create Space, or maybe via my publisher. I haven't decided that. I know they're working on a novel for me, but we haven't been in talks about doing a campaign for Smile with Dictation. So either I produce it myself, or I work with my publisher after we do the novel for a digital campaign with Smile with Dictation. It's coming, you guys. I just haven't gotten my act together. So I'll let you guys know when it comes, but the podcast is changing as of September 11th. So if you know of an author that wants to be on the podcast, please let them know. And because of this crowd-funded podcasting model, you guys have to be the marketing department. I do have a publicist, but that's to get me on podcast. And I do talk about my podcast on podcast. So you guys have to help me out, have to share the podcast, have to, and I'll put, I'll have my assistant put the intake form on the website so you guys can copy it, you guys can download it, you guys can share it out, because this is the only way that this listener-supported model is going to work. So again, it's the $400 for podcast coaching. It's the $600 for speaking engagements, and either virtually or in person, or it's the $60 if you have a disability. It could be anything from cerebral palsy to PTSD or hidden disability. You just need to tell me I have a disability, and then I'll Google it, and then I'll work with you guys for $50, but only if you have a disability. And there are so many disabilities out there that you guys need to get your voices out there, and you guys need to promote the niche like Nancy and I are doing. And I appreciate you guys listening to my rambling and listening to Nancy's story again, and I hope you guys enjoyed another fabulous episode. Thanks to you guys. Bye.